This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
Hello, listener. I'm Carl Anker, and welcome to Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic. This week, Manchester United are victorious. Again, this time over Liverpool in the FA Cup. We're going to analyse the continued improvement in United's performances, whether 21-21 truly is on, and we're going to be going over some comments from Athletic subscribers as to whether their opinion has changed on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. As ever, when you speak of the devil, these two wonderful pundits will appear. I am joined by Laurie Whitwell, my fellow United beat writer. Laurie, how are you doing? How was your Sunday?
I'm doing good, Carl. Yeah, Sunday was good. Obviously, watched the game yesterday. You were there at Trafford Forest, weren't you? So I was able to stay in the warmth of my own home and see Alan Shearer and Ian Wright discuss the game. And yeah, really good mood, because I think it was a big win for United. You know, one of those matches that felt like a moment to be seized, and they actually went and did it.
It's beginning to feel like a statement victory. I'm going to greet my other guest here. I gave him a little socially distanced elbow before kickoff at Old Trafford on Sunday. It's Mr. Andy Mitten. Andy, how you doing?
Hi, Carl. I'm fine. The adrenaline's just wearing off sort of 24 hours after the game, and I'm not even a player. I really enjoyed the game of football. I enjoyed it more because Manchester United won, and you said a statement. I think it was. United have beaten the reigning champions and came back. And there's some great goals, there's some great performances, and we're going to talk all about it. So I think there's maybe three or four times in a good season where you get the high that I'm feeling now, and it's just starting to wear off because I've had like 4 hours sleep. But yeah, all good, mate. My wife said, oh, United won, did they?
I spotted Andy in the press inner section close to the press box before kickoff, and he was having a conversation with Darren Fletcher. So I sort of waited for that conversation to finish before I went over to speak to him. Andy, you woke up at 4 o'clock this morning to catch a flight. I love asking you whereabouts in the world you are, but you've been about recently, haven't you?
I have, mate. I woke up at 3:40 and I had to get to Heathrow. I left plenty of time, but the M6 was closed, and that was like a disaster for me. Maybe not a disaster in the current climate of what's going on in the world, but everything's relative to your own circumstances. The roads were dangerous. They were full of snow. And I sat panicking near Lim Services thinking, what am I going to do? There's no flights anymore. There's normally 20 flights a day between Barcelona and London, and now there's one every 4 days. The checks are really stringent, which is good. I had a COVID test on Friday at 5 p.m. I had one on Saturday at 5 p.m., which is all good. I don't mind doing that. I'm able to do my job properly. And 1 minute to five, and the M6 opened. And I just drove onto this empty motorway and headed south, and life was wonderful. I rolled into Heathrow, and the lady said, we've just closed your flight. And I said, but it's in 1 hour. She went, no, it's not. It's 58 minutes. And I said, please. And she said, right, get all your documentation out, which now, for people who haven't been traveling, it is a considerable amount of documentation. Anyway, seat 14A, okay, sir? Too right it is. Get straight through. You've got 9 minutes to get through security. Exhausted but buzzing. Got on the flight.
Exhausted but buzzing is probably a really good way to sum up Manchester United. And probably a good way to sum up the way they play right now. Sort of game through it by the skin of their teeth and a little bit of charm and cleverness. United beat Liverpool 3-2. It was really fun. I was wearing two face masks in Old Trafford, but I was grinning from ear to ear, and I might have done a big fist pump when Bruno Fernandes scored. Laurie, you were watching on television. What did you think?
I agree with you, Carl. I think it was a really entertaining game. And I sort of said, I wonder if this game, because we had the Anfield game where it felt a little bit flat ultimately, even though it was a sort of decent performance, and maybe was it a missed opportunity? I sort of felt it was. And I wondered what they would approach this game like. Had United playing smartly against Liverpool, trying to find ways to combat the different threats that they had, but in a very front foot manner, really, attacking every chance they got. Some of the first half moves where they put it together, certainly down the left, where I think Rashford was imperious all game, you know, they were really entertaining to watch. I think they utilised, it felt like Liverpool wanted to, you know, they've had a difficulty, haven't they, in scoring goals recently, and they decided clearly to, you know, go on the offensive themselves. So you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andrew Robertson both bombing forward and trying to overload United in the wide areas. But that allowed the space then for United to counterpunch, and Rashford often would just sort of occupy that space and wait for the ball to come his way, and away we go. And I think it was a smart by United. Obviously, it was a risky one. You know, Liverpool could have scored in those moments, and it depended on Scott McTominay doing some really good defensive work. Obviously, Paul Pogba as well. You know, the tackle that he put in for Mason Greenwood goal was another indication that he's, you know, doing both parts of the game really well at present. And the way they took the goals was impressive. You know, the finishes, and clearly then, you know, break the emergency glass. Bruno Fernandes comes on and scores a peach for free kick. But I think it was a just victory. I know that Liverpool had their moments. Mo Salah could have scored a hat-trick, couldn't he? But I think that's the way that United fans want United to play. And clearly they've got enough firepower at the moment to outgun any team. You know, if it's Liverpool, you know, that, all for the better. I know that they were a little bit, defensively with Reece Williams, young lad, you know, difficult game for him. And clearly, you know, if Virgil van Dijk had been playing there, it might have been a different story. I just felt that this was a performance where United said, no, we are a good team ourselves. This is what we're going to do. They didn't shrink back into themselves. You know, they went for the win in normal time. And so that's why I just think it was a statement when obviously this is United's first win over Liverpool for a few years, Solskjaer's first victory over Klopp in that sense. And, you know, he's got a decent list of managers that he's now beaten. So I think that's why it felt, you know, significant, even though it's, you know, FA Cup fourth round, nothing won yet, and plenty more, you know, matches to go in that competition, let alone, you know, the Premier League. But it just felt like a bit of a shift in the dynamic between the two clubs.
There was a palpable momentum shift in that game multiple times. United, the wide men of Rashford and Mason Greenwood stayed wide as they did previously against Fulham. Andy, you were in Old Trafford with me. Did you contribute to the round of applause that went to Mason Greenwood's opening goal?
I'm a professional journalist and had to cover both teams objectively. I was, however, distracted when I looked to my right to see Darren Fletcher jumping up and bouncing around and privately thinking, this is absolutely fantastic, that it means a lot to him. Clearly, he's doing a job. He's looking at the game from a different perspective at the back of the stand. And I agree with a lot of what Laurie said and some of the little bits he picked out, such as Paul Pogba's defensive duty, which led to that first goal. Rashford's pass was on the near side, close to where we were. Don't think we'll see a better pass. I think in the space of a few days, we've seen Pogba's goal at Fulham and Rashford's pass. But I didn't expect United to win. If I'm honest, I still felt that when it came to it, when one of the teams had to go through, Liverpool had more experience. They are the champions. I thought, they can't be this bad. They can't continue to keep on losing. And when they went ahead, and it was a superb finish, which, and the ball split Lindelof and Shaw, and they're probably both a little bit frustrated about that. I thought, here we go. We've had a good run here. And so I was doubly delighted that United came back from it, not just because they scored the goals, but some of the football that they played. And I spoke again to Darren Fletcher at half time, and he knows more about football than I do. So I listen to what he says just in terms of the tactics. If he wants to ask me about fan culture, I'll have him all day long. But he would see things in Cavani or in Van der Beek that I can't see, because he's a professionally qualified UEFA A licensed coach who's just a geek for absorbing all of this stuff. And it was a positive outlook. Now I can see that myself. And then United in the second half, were worthy of victory. Liverpool had the moments. I missed, I think it was Andrew Robertson screaming. I thought, if Liverpool, I only saw it back on TV. I thought,
proper
if Liverpool
AstroTurf that.
Yeah, but if Liverpool are resorting to screaming at players to distract them, we've got them here. We really have. We're on one. And you can see that that Cavani's added a bit to it, that a couple of the weaker players have been moved on. It's coming together, and United still haven't won anything, but this team is improving. And you beat Liverpool, the league champions, and only missing a couple of players. That is a really, really impressive victory. The week before, when Loris said it was a bit flat, you sense both teams perhaps would have settled for that draw. There had to be a win yesterday, so they both had to change their approach for a much more open and hugely entertaining game. Did you enjoy it, Carl?
I really enjoyed it. I was not as objective and neutral as you were in the press box. I must say, I did shout good boy when Greenwood finished, and I did give a clap to Marcus Rashford's finish as well, although I'm a little bit biased whenever Marcus Rashford does something brilliant there. I truly enjoyed that game. I think there were some fantastic performances, not only from Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford. I think Edison Cavani's movement was fantastic. He more or less led a counter-attack by himself after winning the ball. It's very strange to think a striker of Cavani's, I won't call him old, but slightly advanced age, is the best at leading the press, but here we are. I think there was another fantastic performance from Paul Pogba. I think Luke Shaw, not only against Liverpool, but again, in the game against Fulham midweek, was fantastic as well. I think he's added something to United with the corners, even if Harry Maguire and Paul Pogba can't quite get them on target yet. Things are getting better, and I really enjoyed Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's press conference at the end of the game, where he mentioned how this team is getting better layers by layers. I'm going to hold my hands up and say I've not been the most Ollie in United fan and journalist, but what I am beginning to appreciate are these new layers Ollie is adding to the team. And there are noticeable differences to how this United team are playing now compared to how they're playing at the start of the season, where they were constrained by fitness problems, and how they were playing during the project restart. He's adding new elements. He's adding new ways of playing. And you can see more so now what they're trying to do. Are you stuck at home, bored of Netflix, and realise there's a reason people play Scrabble only once a year? Well, The Athletic are coming to your rescue. With the help of our friends at Prostate Cancer UK, we're going to be putting on 31 football quizzes across February and March to find our most knowledgeable subscriber. And of course, raise money for a very important cause. Prostate Cancer UK help fund life-saving research and provide valuable support and information for men and their partners affected. We'll be encouraging you to donate money on the night for a great cause. We run a quiz for every team we cover, which of course includes Manchester United. The winner of each quiz will go through to a grand final at the end of March, and it'll be a nice £1,000 available for grabs. And we'll match this donation for Prostate Cancer UK. The quizzes will be hosted by a correspondent for that club or league. So, Manchester United fans, you will have Laurie Whitwell being your host, and you'll be able to team up with anyone in your household to play. You can sign up for a 30-day trial for free at The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/PCUK to register to play the quiz. That's theathletic.com/PCUK. Right, should we talk about one player who's in perhaps a little bit of a funk? It's Donny van de Beek. Laurie, he's in David Ornstein's column this Monday. I believe you had a little comment about how Donny's been getting on at Manchester United.
Yeah, it's a really interesting item from David Ornstein in his column on the fact that Solskjaer had a meeting with him before the Fulham game. I don't think it was anything, you know, formal such, but a sort of sharp sort of discussion between the pair of them about where he's at, what the plans are, and Van der Beek left that feeling good about, you know, the situation. Clearly, it's not been ideal since he's joined from Ajax. He would have rather played more matches, but then again, he will always join with the expectation that it would be a rotation system, and, you know, with Bruno Fernandes occupying that number 10 role so, you know, imperiously, I think he understood that he would have to bide his time a little bit. I suppose the matches that he's started in, he hasn't been able to impose his style on the team, or rather adapt to United style, because he comes from an Ajax system that is pass and move, pass and move. But the meeting between him and Solskjaer's quite good at making sure that his players are understanding of where they're at, and I think that was what the meeting did. You know, we'll see in the summer, I suppose, how much more, you know, games he plays this year. it's probably not a situation that he'd want to extend into a second season. But, you know, we'll see what the future is with Paul Pogba and whether that had an impact on how frequently Donny van de Beek plays. Because I think that's probably caught a few people by surprise, how good Pogba has been in recent weeks and the fact that really you can't drop him at the moment. He's played all over the pitch and he's played well in each of those positions in recent weeks. But I think what the game did do, sort of just remind people, because you and I both, don't we? You know, and I'm sure Andy's got it on Twitter, whenever you sort of announce the team for that day and we do our Q&As on The Athletic and, you know, we talk about what the lineup is, you get a lot of people asking, where's Donny? Mm-hmm. You know, free Donny, you know, van de Beek, what's he got to do to get a start? And I suppose the match just reminded people that it isn't like he's going to come in and tear everything up and he's like chomping at the bit to, you know, score, you know, or assist. You know, I think clearly it shows that he needs a little bit of work still. It's just about that frequency, I think, that, you know, he's on perhaps a slightly different one to United players given where he's come from. And it'll take time. We've seen with Fred, you know, that it took time for him when he came from Shakhtar Donetsk, and Solskjaer's in a good position to encourage those improvements and get a sort of unified thinking with his players. So I think that was what the meeting was about. And, you know, there was that moment, wasn't there, in the first half where van de Beek sort of stopped. It was a good ball out to him on the wing and it was a counter-attack, and you're looking at it and there's, I think, Rashford in the middle maybe, and you think a first-time cross there is what Bruno Fernandes would have done. And listen, it might not have succeeded. It might well have been intercepted and, you know, goes out for a throw-in and therefore, you know, keeping hold of the ball and passing it back as Donny van de Beek did is the more shrewd move. But I think it sort of felt like it took the sting out of United's attack, and United ended up losing the ball anyway. So, you know, I would always say, why not try that sort of ball? And I think that's probably what Solskjaer wants to see from him. So we've had the West Ham game away, haven't we, where mm-hmm. he got substituted at half time. We've had the Everton League Cup game where he came off after sort of 60 odd minutes, and now this game. And in each occasion, United haven't been winning and then have gone on to win the game. And I know that's probably a simplistic reading of van de Beek's contribution. He's clearly a very talented player, and you only have to go back to the opening game of the season when he, you know, only had, you know, cameo appearance there and managed to score a goal and prove influential. And the RB Leipzig game when he came on at half time away, you know, he nearly did very well in rescuing a pretty desperate situation there. So he has had glimpses, but in these moments where he's had, you know, chances to start and to be given the mantle of being United's creative force, he hasn't quite taken it. And I know you've got some interesting thoughts on that, haven't you, Carl, in terms of, you know, where he's come from with Ajax and what his role in this current squad is?
Very much so. I think this will be a piece going out on The Athletic sometime, either towards the end of this week or the start of next week. And we watched him on Sunday. He was in the number 10 position behind Edinson Cavani. I think that's his best position. And one thing that stood out to me, other than that chance you mentioned, Laurie, was in the opening 5 minutes, van de Beek ran ahead of Cavani and peeled out to the right wing, which is something he did a lot at Ajax, where he would move ahead of, again, slightly older strikers. So in Ajax's case, it was Huntelaar. In United's case, it was Cavani. And he tends to go out to these wide areas so he can do loads of pullbacks. And he went off wide right to take some of the attacking burden of Wan-Bissaka. And then Wan-Bissaka sort of just tried to play the ball out to him, and he just went out immediately for a throw-in. And there, I think, sort of sums up the issue van de Beek has, in that he's going to pick up really good positions in the number 10 position. He's going to get into those areas of the pitch where if you can get the ball to him, he can do really interesting things. But I'm not sure if United are going to find him yet. Andy, United have to play Sheffield United in midweek and then Arsenal on the Saturday. Do you think Donny plays and starts either of these games?
I said right at the start of the season, I didn't expect him to be a first-team player all the time. Look at the players gone from Ajax to other big clubs. Frenkie de Jong, I watched him play last week. They take time to settle. And the point about Fred taking time is a relevant one. I don't think it's that unusual that a player costs 35, 40 million and for one of the super clubs, if you like, and doesn't go in. I spoke to Mike Phelan about him at the start of the season, and he saw him almost as like another striking option, and he liked his versatility. But I think it's all about getting players to strengthen the squad, to make the squad a deeper squad, and he's one of those players. I thought he did all right against Watford. I thought he did okay, but he started well against Liverpool and faded a little bit, and that's why he was brought off the pitch. Pogba is clearly a factor. I think Pogba will stay if he's happy, and he's very happy at the moment, and he's playing well, he's enjoying his football, his confidence is up, he's longer over his COVID, which took him a lot longer than he expected, and he's playing in the roles, the more advanced roles, usually, that he likes. And Donny will be given time, just as Fred was given time. And there's always a player who fans want to see more of. He's a player who fans are saying he's good, and I can definitely see his qualities. He's an intelligent, tidy footballer. Do I think he's the next Roy Keane? No, but then he wasn't bought to be the next Roy Keane, but in terms of his influence over the team. But I've always said if he bites his time, he'll get his chances, but he does need to have a good run of matches, because when I've seen him play recently, he's been a 6 out of 10 player. There's a lot of players where there's huge room for improvement. Lots of players who can be more consistent than they are being. Would you say Martial's having a great season or Greenwood? I wouldn't. Rashford's having a good season, but there's games where he drops right out. Cavani is a man people are talking about at the moment, but his season has been an interrupted one. So we spoke about Luke Shaw on this podcast. He's doing really well. I think it's really encouraging that we can look around the team and see that there are players who know they can do even better. And if they can all click, wow, we're going to have one hell of a team. The lad deserves chances. When United signed him, they didn't say to him, you've been brought here to be a substitute. But when he gets his chances, he's got to take them, and he will need a little bit of time. And finally, on this point, I spoke to Stephen Pienaar. Stephen went from Ajax to Everton, but he said to me the crucial thing was going to Germany first. He said he would have really struggled going from Ajax to the Premier League. And that's a man who thrived in the Premier League, speaking from experience. And that's a man who I called 2 days after Donny van der Beek signed. He knows Donny very well. Steven's a coach at Ajax. And his overriding message, when everyone was getting carried away, saying this is a guy who starred against Real Madrid, was be patient, it will take time. And I'm more inclined to listen to that judgment than someone who's just super excited because he's a young new player from a very good club.
It will take time. I think he's a clever player. He's got a little tendency to mark the space rather than the man. So every now and again against Liverpool, it looked as if he was bypassed those easily, where I think what he was trying to do was cover some space. But I expect Donny van der Beek to be a success either towards the end of this season or next season. I am going to quickly smooth over the fact that you said Paul Pogba's happy and might stay, because I know that's just going to start travelling around the interwebs.
So that's what I was going to pick him up on, Carl.
I can't believe you've said that.
I'll repeat it clearly. He's happy and he's enjoying his football and he's playing well and his confidence is up, and that has not always been the case. So the longer that continues, the more likely he is to stay at Manchester United.
Do you mean stay at United, you know, for the rest of his contract, or do you think, I know we've been here before, we've oscillated between he could sign a new contract, he could leave, he could see out his contract and go on a free, but do you mean stay, you know, just for one more year until his contract's expired, or do you mean for longer?
There's been no talk to Paul about a new contract. I think he'd be amenable. I think he's enjoying his football now. I think the dream which he was sold when he came from Juventus in 2016 didn't measure up. The players who he was told would come in around him didn't quite happen. So obviously, United wanted Lukaku to be a big success. It didn't quite happen. People didn't think that Jose Mourinho would be moving on, and Paul had at times a tense relationship with him, but he's enjoying his football now. And I think that's pretty clear. And I think his inclination to leave, and throwing other factors from the other side, where would have Paul Pogba have gone to? Barcelona don't have money. Real Madrid don't have the type of money that they used to have. Paul Pogba has not been the best player in the world. There's not the demand for his services that there was 4 years ago. So it's all right, Paul saying he's happy. And you know, I want to stay at one of the biggest clubs in the world. I think David De Gea, there was a little bit of that with him.
Well,
you know,
that's
I'm happy
what I'm
here, I'm happy
of.
Here. Exactly. The grass might be greener, but actually no one's going to come close to paying what Manchester United are paying me. But think where we were with Pogba at the start of December. I don't think you could find many United fans who A, expected him to stay, or B, wanted him to stay. And he's still got to do a lot to win back the trust of a lot of supporters, but he's doing it. He's playing really well. We've been on this roller coaster so many times that just when you're at the bottom point thinking, do one, go now, things start picking up for him a bit. I also feel that finally, his agent probably realises that his comments at the start of December were at best ill-timed and at worst panicky.
Well, that's a crucial point, I think, because how do you come back from the you know, his agent saying it's over at United? You know, does he have to? I know he released something on Instagram where he said, I'm, you know, 100% or was it 1,000% committed to United? And, you know, he's obviously shown that, but to come back from such a badly timed and sort of unequivocal statement from his agent, is there anything that needs to be done there just to kind of to smooth that over?
I think his agent wouldn't have said those comments again. I think one thing that will win people over is his performances on the pitch. It's all about results, and it's not just individual, it's the same for the team. We can smile and laugh along about Ole Gunnar. We won't be doing that if United have just lost six matches. When he's playing well, then Manchester United will be more inclined to talk contracts with him, to consider opening contract negotiations with him. He's got a good relationship with Ole, and that goes right back to 2009 when he joined the club. Paul didn't speak English. Ole was a coach there. And that's a deep relationship. It's a deeper relationship than he's had in any coach in his entire career. So there's lots of positives there. And I'm not going to say that he didn't want to leave, because we all thought with good reason that he wanted to leave. And nor am I going to say that he's absolutely going to be playing for Manchester United in a year's time or in 2 years' time, because as we've seen in the last 6 weeks, the situation can change. But the outlook for Paul Pogba is brighter now than it has been for a long time.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Now, you've mentioned contracts and you mentioned signings, so let's have a little transfer section. Laurie, which superstar's coming this January? No, I'm joking. Do you have any news?
You sound
on
like
potential...
all my mates.
The amount of text messages I get.
They're always texting me.
Giallo? No, Giallo, I think. let it be said on this podcast, what I say in the Q&As a lot. Let Giallo sort out his home Wi-Fi and figure out what day the bins go out first. And then we can talk about when he's going to get a start. Laurie, do you know anything regarding ingoings and outgoings at Manchester United at this point in time?
You've set me up there to say no and expose myself as being woefully inadequate with sources. Well, I had a little item in David Ornstein's column this week just on Facundo Pellistri in terms of potential loans, because I think it is an area that they're looking at, how to best, you know, get his development, you know, kick-started, because he's done well for the under-23s, but there's an issue in terms of away games where he has to travel down separately, you know, if he does play. So a lot of the time he hasn't done that. So he didn't do that last week at Leicester. And I think United are sort of looking at the situation thinking, is there a way we can get him regular competitive games at a good league, you know, that will, you know, help his development for the second half of the season? That being said, I don't think they look at the Championship as a sort of right move for him, as the best suiting sort of path for him, just because of the kind of, you know, he's only 4 months into being England anyway, so sort of send him out then again to a sort of another alien environment might be a bit difficult. So I think that's why they're looking at, you know, continental Europe. La Liga is obviously, it would be an ideal situation, and Celta Vigo have registered an interest with him, with the club over him, you know, the Spanish speaking mother tongue that he's got. And Leon, I think, have also had an interest in him previously, so that, you know, it could come again for him. But so it's a live issue really, where, you know, I think United are looking at it. It's not to say that he definitely will go out on loan, but it's one that they might, you know, we've got a few more weeks, haven't we, until the end of the January window, so that might be one to look at. But yeah, in terms of sort of first team level, I think it's as you were really. I know that Jesse Lingard is still one that I think would like to to go out and get regular game time. You know, Marcus Rojo and Sergio Romero talks are ongoing over what happens with the end of their contract, 6 months left. Do they leave now or in the summer? And in terms of incomings, you know, we've discussed, haven't we, previously, you know, the cover for a right back, but I think that's one for the summer, and other positions. I think, again, it's looking likely. The only things they do now is if something remarkable came up that they were long-term target for the summer anyway, and it suddenly transpired that they could do it, you know, like Bruno last January.
Facundo wants to play first team football. You mentioned Celta, there's other clubs in Spain as well, and obviously the Spanish language is a good thing. I said again right at the start when people were saying, and even United were saying, he's going straight into the first team squad. That's just not what I've been told. That's not what I've been told at all in terms of where his game is. Clearly very talented, wants to play first team football. Jesse Lingard wants to play first team football, and not United. Obviously United, that's not going to happen. So they've both got to move on. And it's about getting the clubs that are interested that can get the deals done, but also about Manchester United and Ollie letting them go. Mm-hmm. And that's not straightforward either, because if you're Ollie, you might think, we've got the Europa League, we might have a lot of games coming up. We're still in the Football Association Cup because we knocked out Champions Liverpool 3-2 at Old Trafford. So there's going to be more games there as well. Not that I'd be expecting Jesse to be starting anytime soon, but footballers want to play football, and it can help United if these lads go out and play at a decent standard. The football technically in Spain is very, very good. If you look at some of the young United lads who've gone out there, Andreas Pereira had a really good loan at Granada, then that moved on up to sort of Valencia level. So I wouldn't be surprised if both of them move, but we're running out of time now, aren't we?
I'd be interested to see Pellistri in La Liga. I'd also be slightly more interested to see Pellistri at Lyon and hear what Memphis Depay could tell him about playing for Manchester United's first team. Anyway, subscribers to The Athletic may have seen a discussion we had on the website this morning where we simply asked, has your opinion changed on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? As I've just said on this podcast, mine has. I thought I didn't see much of a tactical plan earlier on in the season. Now I'm seeing brand new layers and layers that I find very intriguing. We've got one comment here from Stephen M that I'm going to read out now, which says, signing Fernandes for sure has helped, but you still have to play him in a way that suits his ability. Players like Shaw, who looked like a shadow of himself in the past, are now consistent, reliable performers. And let's not forget, Paul Pogba actually playing a balanced role and doing work on both ends of the pitch. Would another top manager have achieved what Ollie has, given the circumstances? I'm going to throw this one to Andy first, because he's seen more United managers than I have.
I think Ollie's doing a good job, and we can what if and what about and say, you know, if Allegri or Ancelotti or Guardiola would have come in. I think the times where Ollie's made obvious mistakes, we've pointed it out. We spoke particularly strongly about Fred against PSG at Old Trafford. And he has made mistakes. All managers made mistakes. But I think he's doing a consistently good job. And I think now when you step back and look at the horrific start to the season, you can see the reasons why. Pogba wasn't fit and there wasn't a pre-season. So those two reasons were major contributory factors. And he's got a plan. The plan is there. His recruitment is decent. We have wobbles. There's times when I think, whoa, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, that shouldn't be happening. Or Dan James, he started really well and then he faded badly. But Bruno was the masterstroke. He completely changed Manchester United. The other players around him had to raise their game. The form's picked up massively. Going over a year unbeaten away from home is incredible. But United still haven't won anything under Ollie. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that goes on. There will be not unreasonable criticisms because it is Manchester United. It's all right saying, wow, underdogs Manchester United. I think United have still got the biggest wage bill in the Premier League. So United should be achieving. I love this comeback spirit that we're seeing all the time. Don't love it when the games are going on. Even when you go behind against Fulham, you think, this is ridiculous. This is just... You keep your mouth shut and then, bang, get in there.
I will say...
Obviously, I'm an objective journalist, so I don't celebrate.
Laurie, how are you thinking about Solskjaer, and how do you think this season is comparing to last season?
Well, actually, you touched on... you reminded me of a piece that I wrote after the Bournemouth game last season where Josh King scored 1-0 and United never really looked like getting back into it. It was, you know, just sort of Bournemouth were able to see it out pretty comfortably. There was a bit of a rally late on, but it was sort of, you know, too little too late. And I think that was the 11th game where United had gone behind in all competitions and not, you know, mustered a comeback. And obviously now you look at it and was it 7 times they've gone behind in the league? I mean, this is all away from home as well, to come back to win, but then to do it against Liverpool again. You know, when Salah scored, there wasn't a feeling of, right, that's it, that's the game over, it's going to follow a familiar pattern. As we have had perhaps previously, it felt like, okay, this is just the start of what could be an engaging game, and it turned out to be the case. So I think that is something that Solskjaer certainly deserves. That's probably the biggest thing I think Solskjaer deserves credit for, the character that he's instilled in the team, because teams don't win stuff without having that. You know, you can be talented individuals, but if there's, you know, fraying elements of a group, of a squad, then, you know, ultimately success will be, you know, an oasis in the desert that never quite appears. And I think that the fact that you've got this now, this sort of, you know, personality to the group, I keep on banging the drum on that one, but I feel like that is Solskjaer's biggest achievement, because you look at the team that he took over and the mood in the camp, you can't, you know, overestimate, you can't sort of undersell how low it was after Jose Mourinho. And that's not to sort of necessarily denigrate Jose Mourinho, it's just a fact of how, you know, low the general mood was and the morale. So for him to kind of come in, and obviously it's taken time, but I think they're in a really good place now. And yeah, I agree with you, Andy, that clearly I feel like I've always been supportive of Solskjaer as an appointment. I don't think you come into United as having won the Champions League with a foreign club to warrant being Manchester United manager. I think there is certainly something to be said about somebody that understands what the club is about, and clearly he had done his coaching, he had done his management. You know, he obviously had the disappointment at Cardiff, but he'd done well with Maldon. I think that shouldn't be discounted in terms of how he then manages people and how he sets up his teams and deals with difficult situations that come at you as a manager that you wouldn't expect when you're a player or a coach. That kind of overarching view of a club that clearly a United manager does have, you know, he's got more autonomy than, you know, a head coach role at other clubs that we see. So I think I've always been, you know, fairly supportive, but there have been moments where you've wondered, where you just sort of slightly thought, is he the guy? But I think all those questions have been answered, really. And whatever happens from now, he certainly deserves to be Manchester United manager, and he's done so much to progress the club into this moment where you've got a first team to be, you know, proud of, really, and the academy's, you know, looking good. You've got players that are getting moments and you know, you're bringing players through, and that's always been a pillar of the club, obviously going back to the Busby Babes. So, you know, he's all these elements he seems to be knitting together well with, like I say, that overarching view as a Manchester United manager. I think, you know, for those points that Stephen M, one of our subscribers, mentioned, you know, all those points I think are very valid. The improvement that he's got from certain players as well, you can't overlook. And listen, there probably will be more bumps in the road, you know, but then every manager has bumps in the road. You look at Guardiola earlier this season and people were wondering, is he actually now been found out? You know, has he burnt his players out with his demands? You know, Klopp, obviously, yeah, there's not going to be questions really about him just yet, but you could see if they don't get out of this slump, you know, people will perhaps start, you know, just asking a little, you know, does he need to do something different? Does he need to freshen his ideas up? There's always, you know, question scrutiny on managers because of the positions that they're in. And I don't think any elite manager is above that. So Solskjaer clearly is a smart guy, knows what he's talking about, understands football fundamentally. So, you know, and he's obviously got the club at heart. I don't think you can dismiss that at all. You know, people probably did, you know, use that as a stick to beat United with. You know, he's only got the job because he was a club legend, and sort of saying that is a point where you shouldn't give a guy a job. Well, I don't know. I would disagree on that, just because with Solskjaer being with his heritage, with the things that he's done at United previously. I mean, this is a guy that had a clause in his Mould contract so that he could leave for free if United ever gave him the job. That's how much he...
That's backing yourself, I'll tell you that for sure. I think what's really interesting about Ollie and Ollie's tenure is how he always talks about the United DNA, and he talks about the great United teams of old, which sometimes when United aren't winning can be a little bit tiresome. But I think when Manchester United are winning and its current state, you are beginning to see him take those old influences and doing them for the new age. And I'm thoroughly impressed by what he's doing at the moment. And long may it continue. Andy, you spoke to Ollie recently about Indian food. Twice, I hear.
Yeah, I spoke to him before the game, and after asking him the usual questions that we'd ask him, a few quick fire questions, and one of them was Indian or Chinese food, and he said Indian. And then he said chicken korma. And when it went out there, because it was for TV, he got slaughtered for saying chicken korma, because as everyone who knows anything about Indian food knows, it's not really Indian food, is it? That's just like a dessert with a bit of chicken in it. And so after the game, I spoke to him again and asked him like the proper questions. And then I looked him in the eye and said, you're coming under sustained criticism on social media. And he looked at me like a nervous, where's this going? I said, for your choice of Indian food. And he just, whew, you felt him relax right in front of you. And he started smiling and just said pretty meekly, I don't like spicy food. I'm sorry. I'm happy with korma. And this was all on live TV. And then he walked away as the interview finished. And as he walked away back to the dressing rooms, he said the following, I love chicken korma and lamb Rogan Josh. And it just made me laugh. You know, I've done my job. I've spoke to him about the serious stuff. And I think football should have these light moments as well. Clearly, if United would have lost the match, I wouldn't have spoke to him about his favourite Indian dish. But he was smiling. Lots of us were smiling after beating Liverpool. And why not? There's a human there, you know. We might talk to him about his tactics, but he's got to eat food, hasn't he? To get energy to decide those tactics. So, yeah, it's a bit of fun.
I will say, one thing that did surprise me since making the trip up north and covering Manchester United was I did not expect Ollie to be this funny. He does crack quite a few jokes in press conferences, and he often replies when you ask him about injuries, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, in a sort of tongue-in-cheek manner. So we'll see in regards to the latest injury possible issue, which is a scan Marcus Rashford has on his knee.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I think we are nearing the end of this episode of Talk of the Devils. Before we wrap things up, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, then throughout January, you can subscribe for a special discounted price. You can enjoy great analysis on Manchester United and other football teams in the Premier League, the Championship and beyond, even some other sports. It's nearly the Super Bowl in the NFL. You can enjoy all of that, as well as ad-free versions of our podcast, all for less than £1 a week. All you have to do is go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod to sign up. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Included in recent Manchester United features, we've got Andy talking about the last time Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was involved in knocking Liverpool out of the Football Association Cup in 1999, which is just a lovely read. Laurie has done a great piece on Luke Shaw and his resurgence. There is no confirmation about his height in that piece, to my disappointment, but there's some really good stuff on why he's got better. Thank you to the commenter you pointed out in the FIFA stats. Luke Shaw is billed at being 5'9". No, he's being billed at being 5'11". So this is just going to keep going on and on and on until eventually we get Luke Shaw on the podcast and ask him ourselves. I recently wrote a piece covering the victory over Liverpool, and we will have pieces throughout the week. One of them on a certain Manchester United player who's doing really, really well. Other than that, I do want to give a quick mention to Manchester United's women's team, who have gone top of the Women's Super League once again with a 2-0 victory over Birmingham City. Goals from Leah Galton and Ella Toon. This was a really comprehensive victory. It was available on Sunday, one of the early kickoffs. They're at the top of the table, 3 points clear of Chelsea, although Chelsea have two games in hand. They've recently signed Norwegian centre-back Maria Thosis' daughter, my apologies if I've got the pronunciation wrong, who I've been assured is a really, really good centre-back. Will surely strengthen United's title chase, and it truly is a title chase both for the men's and the women's team. Thank you so much for joining us, listener. It's a goodbye from Andy.
Cheers, Carl. Cheers, Laurie. Thanks for listening, everybody.
A goodbye from Laurie.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And a goodbye from me. Thank you so much for listening to Talk of the Devils.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.